Picture a woman in a sterile hotel room at 2 a.m., her body finally refusing to cooperate with the relentless pace she set. This isn't a dramatic movie scene. It's the moment when the carefully constructed facade of having it all together begins to crumble. At 36, with a loving husband, two young sons, a third book deadline looming, and a travel schedule that kept her in a different city every week, the breaking point arrived not with a bang, but with a quiet, terrifying whisper from her own body. Stop. The signs had been accumulating like unpaid bills, reoccurring bronchitis, sleepless nights punctuated by anxiety, debilitating migraines, episodes of vertigo. But perhaps most devastating was the realization that while she'd become known as the reliable one and the achiever, she'd lost something essential. Her heart had retreated behind walls of busyness, and the woman who once threw candy to passing kayakers just for the joy of it had disappeared, replaced by someone who could only understand worth through accomplishment. This is the story of how one woman discovered that the life she thought she wanted was slowly killing the soul she needed to keep. Why do we run from stillness? We celebrate packed calendars and juggling 17 tasks while appearing effortlessly composed. We build entire identities around this hustle. But here's what that looks like from the inside, using work as a shield against fundamental questions. Am I truly loved? Does someone see the real me? Do I matter beyond what I produce? The to-do list becomes a powerful drug, promising wholeness but delivering only exhaustion. Any activity, international travel, late-night socializing, obsessively reorganizing closets, can become the anesthetic that numbs the ache inside. At a pool party, the familiar refrain emerged, "We really need to see each other more often," followed by the resigned chorus, "But what are you going to do?" Here were educated women in their 30s, utterly resigned to lives that felt overly busy and disconnected. But who's actually forcing this pace? A seasoned pastor once challenged a colleague complaining about uncontrolled church growth, "You kept putting up more chairs. Revolutionary." When asked what he wanted for the coming year, a young boy answered, "More this. More time together like this." We have agency over the size of our lives. We're the ones putting up more chairs. The question isn't whether you can handle more, it's whether more is actually taking you where you want to go. For years, yes felt automatic, the only acceptable response. But constant affirmation became an inadvertent no to rest, peace, and deep connection. Learning to say no felt like wielding a scalpel on your own life, awkward, painful, but ultimately life-saving. Some people will resist your newfound boundaries because they preferred your overfunctioning. They'll push shame buttons. "I guess you're just not a hard worker," or "I thought I could count on you." Here's the revolutionary truth. You get to decide who you'll disappoint. Think of relationships as concentric circles. Those at the center, your spouse, children, closest friends, deserve to rarely be disappointed. Those at the edges, you must become comfortable with their disappointment. This isn't cruelty. It's honest stewardship of a finite life. The first few no's were excruciating, but they opened a door to loving work without resentment. You can't have a meaningful yes without the protecting power of no. Why would God make a writer who hates silence, stillness, and introspection? Perhaps it's divine humor or outrageous grace leading us to unlikely places we need for healing. The uncomfortable truth, you can't outrun anything. Healing happens in silence, staring unflinchingly at wounds, allowing yourself to be truly seen. Some minds spin constantly, remembering obscure details, worrying through nights. Useful in classrooms, but prone to catastrophizing. When that quick mind develops threads of inner violence and self-hatred, something fundamental must change. A friend offered this image about prayer. It's like oil and vinegar dressing. Pour out the vinegar first, all your troubles, hurts, worries, fears. Only after releasing the vinegar can you access the oil beneath, the rich truth that you're going to be fine, that God is present and working. practice this listening, even briefly, and you start carrying inner stillness back into noise like a secret. You become collected, wholehearted, patient, free from paralyzing fear, the person you've wanted to be. A brother who sailed the world once said something surprising. "I think you and Aaron are really brave. Look what you've built. You've stayed with it even when it was hard." Leaving for adventures isn't necessarily brave. Building a marriage, a home, a family, staying when it's hard, that's brave. We're addicted to big, sweeping, photo-ready moments. Crossing oceans, starting ventures, ascending peaks, these get the applause. But brave for many of us is quieter. Staying put when you're addicted to rushing, listening instead of talking, articulating fragile feelings, transforming a marriage from fine to can't live without you. It's easier to impress strangers than to be consistently kind behind the scenes. Sometimes brave means declining an exciting opportunity because your husband says, "I thought the crazy was over," and you realize your boys deserve your best energy. Sometimes it's sending that vulnerable email, afraid you'll seem weak, but feeling peace afterward because you're leaving behind the old pattern of overcommitting and building resentment. Sometimes brave looks boring, and that's exactly right. Playing means spending time lavishly, staring into space, wandering the block, eating blueberries on the kitchen floor with a four-year-old. The goal is keeping a summer heart year-round, flexible, silly, ready to play, slightly irresponsible. Real life isn't wrong. We just default to hustle mode too often. Hustle is the opposite of heart. A free basketball hoop from a neighbor's curb transformed family life. It solved anxious mornings, drew neighbors together, and turned a formal dinner party into a driveway gathering where everyone roasted marshmallows and shot baskets until dark. This simple addition created space in the driveway and inside everyone's hearts. Simplifying the material world creates internal space. At the lake, living with minimal clothes, one toy bin, one book stack, the stuff back home is never missed. A closet filled only with things you love makes each day easier. When you're not managing stuff, you can focus on higher stakes decisions about parenting, marriage, and friendship. The ambient noise quiets, creating space for connection, rest, and listening, for throwing candy right in the middle of it all. It took almost 40 years to feel the worth of the soul. Suddenly, words from a carol sung 1,000 times carry new weight. "He appears and the soul feels its worth." That's what the searching, the ringing out, the zigzagging across the country was really about. A sense of worth, of mattering, of being seen and loved and valued. But the soul's worth doesn't come from earning or proving. Every soul is worthy because God made every soul. What kills a soul? Exhaustion, secret keeping, image management. What brings it back? Honesty, connection, grace. Many of us live the life we always wanted, but beneath that lovely surface lies exhaustion, isolation, emptiness, the ache from a lifetime of trying to prove our worth. The contentedness that emerges is miraculous. A husband says that while the home is messier now, "I have my wife back, and it's totally, completely worth it." A son shares that one of his greatest blessings is that his parents don't work too much to spend time with him. This is what matters, not the numbers or achievements, but the sacred act of being exactly who you are. Your soul isn't collateral damage in pursuit of success. It's the only thing that makes success meaningful. The love you're seeking isn't in the next achievement. It's in the faces of those who've known you all your life, in the children whose noses you kiss while they're sleeping, in prayer and silence. Stop putting up more chairs. Start bringing in the love.